Well, my wife Jennifer was in a traffic accident. It wasn't recent. She's okay. This was about 3 years ago. She was parked at an intersection with a line of cars, and somebody ran into her. And it turned out that the worst thing ever possible could happen because the insurance company looked at our car, and they said that it was totaled. Now, I looked at the car, and I just saw a little bit of damage, but they said it's totaled. The value of the car isn't even worth repairing it, so we'll give you this money, and we'll call it good. Now, I do not like buying cars, okay? I just do not like buying cars because I'm like manic or something. I don't know, but whenever it's time to buy a new car, I first of all get on the internet and try to look at all the safety ratings, and I try to figure out, okay, now we need this many seats, we need this kind of car, I'd like this kind of gas mileage, and so I kind of narrow it down, and then I spend another zillion hours looking at each car, model, and you know what I'm talking about, because some of you are like this, I know it. Nothing is ever a simple decision, and that's me. And especially when it comes to something like a major expense like car, this happens to me no matter what I buy, you know, like a Bible or something, a pair of scissors, you know. I can't just go in and buy a pair of scissors. I got to look at all the scissors. I got to turn around. I got to read it, and, you know, and find out. And then, of course, you got to look and see what the price per cut, I don't know what it is. You know what it is. But there are people out there, when they have to make a major decision, and some of you are like this, you want to know everything. You want to increase your knowledge base. You want to absolutely figure out everything about the product or something that you're going to buy or the decision that you're going to make. You want to find out all the knowledge you can before you make that decision. But not everybody does that. Some people actually just want to know what the rules are. Give me the rule in the box and I'll stay in that box, but other than that, I don't care. Happens to be a person like that in my family. There's two rules when we discussed this new car. One is that it couldn't have electric doors because electric doors are a pain. Okay, so. But there are no minivans. Okay, we knew we wanted a minivan. There are no minivans out there without electric doors. Okay, I mean, that is like standard feature. If you want a minivan without electric doors, you have to order it from Korea and it has to be shipped 2 years or something. I don't know. But you can't do that. There are other people who want to know what the rules are. As long as you just stay by the rules, we're okay. And other people want the wisdom. They want the knowledge. They want to know what it is about everything so that they can make the right decision. Here's the problem. In life, about 80 or 90% of the decisions that you make in this life, no matter how much you research, or no matter how much you stay by the rules, there is still a wide variety of choices ahead of you. And how is it that you make the right choice? How is it that when you come to a path in the road, you take the right path and not the wrong path? And that answer is wisdom. And today we're finishing this 3-week sermon series on wisdom, and we're going to look at what wisdom truly is. How in the world can we as Christian believers gain wisdom so that when we have to buy that car and we have all the knowledge and we know all the rules, we still make the wise choice? But not in just buying the car, but every choice in life that as we grow, we make wise choices. We become wise people. And to do that, we're going to just start right into the book of Proverbs, chapter 4, because the book of Proverbs, chapter 4, tells us how to get wisdom. And the first thing that we need to know about wisdom is this. It's from wisdom, chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. Listen to this. I instruct you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Or how about this, following in verse 14, do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn from it and go on your way. You see, we saw this last week, but wisdom is not a destination. It's a journey. And it's important for us as Christians to realize that it is a whole entire journey because so much of what we do in this world is always looking forward. And this is ingrained in our society. We from the moment we're born, you know, what grade school are you going to go to? What subjects? Or then you get into high school, it's like, well, what are you going to do here? And are we going to prepare you for college? And then you get ready for college, and it's like, well, what college am I going to go to? And then what job am I going to go to? And what person am I going to marry? And what car am I going to buy? And all these things are always looking forward. But wisdom is a path. And wise people, it's nothing wrong with looking forward, but wise people look forward as much as they look backward along the path to see where they've come up to this point and to see what lessons they've learned up to this point. The world doesn't like to do that too much. If you'll remember the Lion King, Pumbaa, right? He's talking to Simba, and he says, well, it's like my buddy Timon says. He says, you just got to put your behind in your past. And Timon says, no, 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 amateur. Sit down before you hurt yourself. It's you got to put your past behind you. I mean, that's what the wisdom of the world is. Don't look at the past. You know, the past is gone. Just move forward, move on, and all that sort of thing. Now, that's not bad. That's not necessarily bad information. But a wise person will always come to a point in the path where they will sit down, and they will look and reflect on what's happened. Wise people will take the path and look and say, what did they learn from it? You may have all heard that saying that was popular. I don't see it much, but some people have it as plaques in their room or in their house, or sometimes you see it in churches, but it's at the time where you realize that your path was footprints on the sand, and you looked and they looked and they saw that there were times in their life where their footsteps, instead of being two sets of footsteps, was just one set of footsteps. And they said, Lord, why was it that the most difficult times in my life, you abandoned me? Because there's only one set of footsteps in the sand. And God said, it's that point where I carried you. Now, I'm sure you've all seen that. It kind of sounds a little maybe trite to you, but that's really what a journey is looking back and realizing those times that Jesus Christ was with you. Because God is always with you. You know, you take the wrong path, He doesn't just leave you. He's there with you to help you. He doesn't abandon His children. That's the first point. But the second point is this. This is in verse 18 and verse 19. The path of the righteous is like the morning sun shining ever brighter till the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not even know what makes them stumble. You see, wise people will always seek outside information. They won't rely on their own internal information to make judgments about the future. And yet, so many times, this is what we do. We think, well, I can, you know, especially people like me, who think they know it all, right? I know, I don't need any other information. I'm just going to go, and I'm going to do it the way I think I should be do. But see, God says, no, 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 no. You can't know everything. The only things you can know are what people tell you. And if you really want to grow in your wisdom, you need to seek outside information. I went to this great presentation about 6 months ago. And in it, this man was telling about employee management. He says there's two types of employees. He says there's those that are wise and those that are fools. And a fool, when you go to an employee that's a fool, this is what they will do. You'll tell them something that is true that they need to hear, and a fool will have one of two responses. The first response is, oh, well, I know I was late that day, but, you know, my car broke down or whatever, and it'll make excuses. Or the other one, a fool will become very defensive. A fool will say, well, that is not me at all. I have no idea what you're talking about. You are wrong, buddy, and I'm not going to believe what you're talking about because I know the truth, and they move forward. See, that's what a fool does. But a wise person, even if the criticism is wrong, will say, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to tell me something that I didn't know, and I will try to incorporate that and learn from that and move forward. And what this guy said is that when you have employees, make sure that you get wise employees and train them in wisdom and not in foolishness. Because if you have wise employees, then you can develop a relationship with them and you will grow deeper and closer together and you will have more excellence in your organization. I thought that was fascinating advice. Wise people have deep, deep, deep introspection. They look at themselves. And here's the kicker. It is very, very difficult to look at yourself and to critique yourself if you do not know that you have been forgiven, that Jesus Christ created you just the way you are, that Jesus Christ loves you and redeems you and frees you to allow yourself to go back and look at your life and critique it. And I think one of the problems in this world today is that they don't believe in God, and so they never go back and critique. Think about it. Christians, welcome the critique. Because what? It points us to Jesus Christ. It shows that we're sinful. It shows we can't do it all. We solely need to rely on Him. It's a great thing. Deep introspection. So first of all, wisdom is a journey. Second of all, it requires deep introspection. But the third one is this, in verses 20 through 23. My son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. You see, the writer of the Hebrews and in the Old Testament, when we think of the word heart, we think of love letters, don't we? Oh, I love you. I adore you. And the heart is the center of love and emotion. But in the Hebrew day, the heart was the center of the whole body. It wasn't just emotion, but it was life, it was breath, and everything was centered in the heart. So when the Hebrew talks about being centered in the heart, what they're saying is that's your whole entire body. And what does it say? Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from that. The third point of wisdom is this: make sure that God is at the center of your heart. In the Psalms, or in the Proverbs, just later on here, in Proverbs 9:10, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now you think, that's no big deal, but oh, it is. Because so many times we put other things except for God at the center of who we are and what drives us and what gives us the passion to live. And for some of us, it might be things that are really, we kind of know, probably shouldn't be at the center of our lives, like money or career or job. I mean, those things are great and we should pursue them. But when they become the center of your life, when your job becomes the most important thing, that title, you might be more inclined to take a job that is completely unsuited for you because then it gives you the title. Ah. I'm now regional vice president. You might make mistakes if you don't put God in the center of your life, but a lot of times, for Christians, it's things that we think maybe should be in the center of our life. You know, what's wrong with putting my spouse at the center of my life? I want my spouse. I want to have her as the center of my life. Everything revolves around her. Well, think about that. That's not very healthy, is it? Or your children. You know, you might put the children in the center of everything. You want to have perfect children. And so, therefore, you either do one of two things. You undercorrect them because you want to be friends with them, or you overcorrect them because you want them to be perfect. And because you have to have perfect children, they become the center of your life. There, I've got a list of 100 things here that could be at the center of your life. And each one of them are probably good things to think about and to have in your life, but not to be at the center of your life. The only thing that should be at the center of your life is God. But He's a great thing to have at the center of your life. He's like the morning star. He's like the sun. He is so bright that once you realize who He is and what He's done for you, you can't help but have Him at the center of your life. He loves you. He adores you. I just saw this movie. It's called Star Trek Insurrection. I don't think I saw it the first time it came out. But Geordi LaForge, you know, is the guy with the you know, the glasses that helps him see. And then they're on this planet that has these healing properties, so it heals his retina, and he doesn't need these glasses anymore. And he's out there watching the sunrise for the first time. He goes, this will be the first time I've ever seen a sunrise without my glasses, so I could see it the way you guys see it. But see, we have a sun who is brighter and more wonderful than any sunrise, and it's Jesus Christ. And once you realize who he is and what he's done, it is not hard to make him center of your life. Solomon, at one point in his life, said, God said, what do you want? You know, I'll give you wealth, rich, fame, family. What does he want? He asked for wisdom. And then God followed along with everything else because everything else follows from wisdom. Wisdom is a great thing. Wisdom is central to being a Christian. Wisdom is knowing that you're going to fail, but knowing that Jesus Christ loves you and forgives you even though you have failed. Because that's who God is. In Jesus' name, amen.